Welcome to CFTV Live, presented as always by Agrigold. You may notice that we're sitting in different chairs, both physically and metaphorically. So Agrigold is, again, willing to take a flyer on me being the analyst. And I don't know if they actually signed up really wholeheartedly knowing that Jared was going to be the analyst, but thanks to Agrigold, you get just that. How you doing, Jared?
Yeah, but at least you're still here.
And that's the important part.
Yeah.
Is that I'm here.
See, we can still brand it as CFTV Live with Jeff Woody, and you're, you know, we don't have to tell anybody that you're not sitting in the analyst chair right now.
So, yeah, literally, again, literally and figuratively, we switched chairs.
We did.
So the thing that we sort of kicked this idea around a while ago, and because I like basketball, and I know like a pseudo amount about basketball, or I could tell, like, for the most part, what five people are doing on the floor at a time, but I don't really think that I know enough about it to really be, you know, like in football, if there's a bad pass, like, you know, even watching like the Jaguars and Steelers the other day, and Ben Roethlisberger just throws looks like a horrible pass. And my dad was all mad. He's a Steelers fan. Dad was all mad. And he's going, where is he throwing that ball? I was like, no, that was actually a really good decision. He's in the pocket. He's getting pressure. There's one underneath route. He just overthrew the underneath route by 10 yards because it wasn't going to get completed. That's the right play. And so by all intents and purposes, it looks like a stupid decision, but it's the right thing to do. I don't have that level of knowledge about basketball, but somebody on the CFTV Live staff does.
Yeah.
That's Jared.
That is, I guess that's me. Yeah. I suppose so.
So since we're out of football season, basketball guy, you probably talked to another podcast. General feeling of what Iowa State was able to rectify for Baylor from Kansas State. I mean, maybe like as a trend, from an outsider's perspective, each one of the four successive games was better than the previous. Mm-hmm. And then they finally got over the hump against Baylor. Why?
I mean, I would say one of the biggest things for the game against Baylor is that they defended pretty well, you know? I mean, there was never really any guy that it seemed like they were just leaving them wide open time after time.
That seems like a good thing to not do.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you think back to, like, the game against Kansas. Like, Sfi got open how many times right at the very beginning of the game?
Well, Sfi needs this much space to be open.
Yeah, as was shown last night when he scored, 15 points in 2 minutes.
Well, who names their child Sfi?
Well, he's from the Ukraine.
An S and a V in succession. I feel like that's not a normal series of consonants. That's
because he's from Ukraine. It might be a normal series of consonants. Okay, but I'm just saying that they weren't just leaving people like wide open like they had done in some of these previous games. And I don't know if that's because Baylor just isn't as good offensively as some of those other teams. They don't have the shooters that those other teams do. And they'd been a fine 3-point shooting team, but Baylor went like 3 of 20 3.
Well, their guards are – I mean, isn't Lindsey, generally speaking, a good shooter?
Yeah.
And
so is Manny LeCompte.
Right. And so neither one of their guards shot anything worthwhile. So I feel like you can attribute that to a cold night. But that outside of that, they don't have big white guy that shoots threes.
Yeah.
That seems to be Iowa State's nemesis is tall white guy.
Like, the thing about Baylor in the last couple seasons is that you had John Motley who could – like, he could step out and shoot a little bit, you know? And Achul, I mean, they were perfectly fine just letting him stand out there.
He's 7 foot
nine.
As long
as he wanted to. I don't think he's 7 foot nine. It'd make him probably the tallest man in the world.
Have you ever stood next to either a cardboard cutout or like a Ripley's Believe It or Not museum where it's like has the tallest person in the world and you go up to like mid rib cage?
Yeah.
Because he's what, like 8'10"?
I think he's probably about 7'10". I think that's like the tallest person ever.
I'm pretty sure 8 foot something.
That's eight feet's really high, dude.
8 feet tall. Well, also, it's like Yao Ming. I mean, Yao Ming, I feel like he's probably still growing because I feel like, no, like Yao Ming is 7 foot. He's,
there's no way
that he is taller now than he was when he was playing.
There's no way. I don't think so.
Well, people with acromegaly, which is that, pituitary disorder that could still continue to grow.
What kind of evidence do you have to back this up?
It's all circumstantial. When you, like, he would stand next to Shaquille O'Neal and dwarf Shaquille O'Neal by like a foot. And Shaq is 7 foot one, and he would be, at the time, I believe he was listed as 7 foot six, which is 5 inches.
Yeah.
He was that much,
maybe
perceptively
they just didn't
much.
List him that high then.
Maybe he was really 7'8". Who on a roster doesn't list the, like, add an extra inch and a half roster?
Like, they would talk about, they talk about how Wilt Chamberlain back in the day, that he was listed like at I don't know, 6'11 or 7 foot, and he was so much bigger than everybody else that he would ever play against. And there were guys that were supposed to be 7 feet tall. He'd still be taller than them.
Well, wasn't that in like the 70s?
Yeah, but it's just because, I don't know, it's just like, you don't always do that, I guess.
That seems unreasonable to not.
Everybody
do that.
Says Kevin Durant's 7 feet tall, but he doesn't want to be 7 feet tall because he feels like there's a stigma of like being
with a seven footer.
Yeah, of being a 7 footer.
Well, when you're that skilled, you can do pretty much whatever you want.
Well, no, see, that's it. Like, he doesn't want people to think of him as a 7 footer. You know,
he wants to think of
really
him as a forward.
So he's listed at like 6'9", 6'10", but in reality, he's like 7 feet tall.
Still, I feel like his weakness would be push-ups.
Yeah, that.
I mean, I don't feel like that's really applicable in a basketball game.
Or,
but his weakness would
or
be.
Or benching.
Or bench press.
Yeah, I feel like those would probably both be.
He has to go
right
far too far with not near enough muscle.
This is why you're not the host. We spent 6 minutes already talking about how Yao Ming is taller than he was when he played and why Kevin Durant
convinced
doesn't
that
want to
he
be
was.
A 7 footer.
He could hold Muggsy Bogues in the palm of his hand.
That is not.
And just carry him around.
That is blatantly false. All right, let's talk more about Iowa State basketball.
Okay. I feel like, so after Texas, Shaka Smart, basically, again, big white dude that can shoot.
Ozitkowski. Dylan Ozitkowski.
Let's go with big white dude.
Okay.
They specifically designed most. I am a not tall white dude, but I was the big white guy.
Okay.
I mean, that kind of was
okay.
My role.
Okay. Okay. Keep going.
Anyway, the specifically designed a lot of their offense around watching Iowa State's Kansas State film because they didn't play pick and roll defense at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have any of that on, like, your video.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do better at that?
I have one. We can look
so
at
it. So I just, again, from the specifics of why is, if someone throws a terrible pass in football, and I can attribute why it was terrible or what could be better, what was going on, that I can know what exactly who's at fault.
Right.
I don't know that with basketball, and I feel like some of our viewers may have the same thing. So help me understand what this is.
Okay. So right here, this is obviously from Saturday, and this is not really what I intended for this clip to be, but a lot of times this is where the ball screen is going to be, 25, just – said it, this guy. And this is Jeff Beverly, and that's Lindell on the ball. So what a lot of times Iowa State does is that Beverly's guy, he's going to come up and try and get this guy to, instead of just going straight around, which is what I think he did here. Like I said, I don't have the beginning of this clip. So I'm going to guess that he started somewhere like right there.
The offensive player?
The offensive guy with the ball. So he was probably like closer to the three-point line, and Jeff wanted to make him go out. You can kind of see that he's pointing out towards out this way rather than going straight towards the rim. So he wanted to make him change direction in what he was doing. You
okay, is that a good thing or a bad thing or just a thing?
That would be a good thing because it slows it down enough to where Lindell can squeeze right through there and get back in front of his man before he is able to go straight to the hoop.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So what actually happened on this play is that when Jeff popped out, either Jeff didn't do the scouting report right or Lindell didn't do the scouting report right, and they ran into each other, which allowed that guy to get a pretty much free rein to the hoop until Cameron Lard comes over, and then he just passes it back for a layup.
Well, and I feel
it turned
like
into an and one. Actually,
if you run that back, like say a little bit, I feel like this is possibly also where
oops, the wrong way.
Iowa State has run into trouble in the past. It's not necessarily on the pick. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. It's not necessarily in the pick and roll defense of the two that are picking and rolling.
Uh-huh.
It's in the help defense because there is that. I'm not sure if that's Lard's guy who's in the bottom corner.
See,
in the short
this,
corner right now.
No, Lard's guy's right here right now.
And so if in the short corner. Or in the
this right here
short
is
corner
Nick Babb's
there.
Guy.
And so Babb has to help off because the pick and roll defense is allowing a free run to the basket, and
yeah.
All of a sudden that guy is wide open.
This is like I said, this one is different just because of the fact that the two run into each other, you know? Like that's just Jeff Beverly didn't get out of the way for Lindell to get through. And I think that's what happened because at the end of the play, you see right here, I mean, Donovan just was like, "What are you doing, dude?" You know, so I'm thinking that Jeff messed up on the scouting report. Either he was not supposed to come up this high, which is more often than not, since Steve Prohm has gotten here, that's how Iowa State has defended ball screens, is with this guy coming up hard and you try and kind of ice the ball carrier. Like, that's what we used to call it when I played at Simpson. You try and ice the guy with the ball and force him up, and then that would make it so that the guy who was guarding the ball would have time to recover.
Okay.
And in this scenario, that didn't happen because they ran into each other.
And is that so? What did you intend this clip for then?
Well, I was just that. I mean, that's basically what it was. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of show you what they usually try to do, and
is usually stay. And this, so have Beverly stay lower, so Lindell can get higher over the ball.
Right. Well, and you can either do it two ways. You can either have that guy try and fight all the way over, you know, and then Beverly would hang back a little bit more, and then Lindell would kind of squeeze into that space.
And so, does this where a
guy, you can go underneath Jeff? And that's why you really need to be able to push them out away from the hoop.
And is this where having a guy like Chris Babb, who is a kind of a man-to-man, just a stuffer, is that where having a guy like Chris Babb, you can be more aggressive on hedging ball screens because you've got a guy that can, because of his feet, can just get... Yeah. Can be on that guy like glue, so you can hedge a little farther and slow down the ball a little bit. Is that another thing that's present?
See, and ideally, what I think probably should have happened here is that when Jeff goes back, he should have not done that because Lindell was going to come here and try and square that guy off, you know. But when Jeff doesn't wait for him to get back under and he just goes right with his man right away, if you can cut that guy off right there, there's not going to be any lane for him to throw into, you know, like right here, if you can just stop him and keep him pushing that way.
And then Jeff, Beverly rolls
Jeff
with.
Jeff then can recover with this guy, and there's not going to be any lane for him to really throw into, especially if Cam Lard is right there already waiting
and Babb
on help
looks,
defense.
And Babb looks like he's relatively close to intercept
anything. But instead, when they run into each other, Jeff gets so far behind his guy then that you get it, I mean, you leave it right easy for him to get a layup, and then that actually turned into an and one. So that's what, I don't know. That was just not a very good sequence for Jeff Beverly, honestly, I would say.
Okay.
He got yelled at.
What would you like to do next as analyst? You get to take it wherever you want to go. That's the enjoyable part of having
the
iPad.
This one is like an off-ball screen scenario. And Iowa State a lot of times does this. They kind of do the same thing. See, right here, the Donovan Jackson's guy is going to start down here. This is kind of like one of the plays Iowa State has run a lot. He's going to come up back around there, catch the ball on the wing to try and get an open shot. Cam Lard right here is this guy on the second ball screen, so that's going to be his responsibility to handle.
Circle, where's Cam Lard?
Cam Lard's right here.
Okay.
Guarding this guy. So it's going to be his responsibility to help Donovan as he comes around here. And then Jeff Beverly is going to have to watch both of those guys, both of these guys.
Okay.
And this guy. To make sure that one of them doesn't just go straight to the basket, you know.
Okay.
And then they can give him an easy back like pass right there. What happens is that Cam kind of takes a lazy approach to it and doesn't really try and deny that pass at all. Or really help Donovan to slow him down enough to where Donovan can get back. And then Achul sets a moving screen right there. Gets his hips out. And then all of a sudden you get a wide open three. Because Cam doesn't recognize fast enough that Donovan's not going to get around that screen.
And is this communication? Is this experience? Is this both?
I think it's a combination of the two. Because
so what would Donovan be? Would he be shouting help, help, help at the time?
You would
like,
have
I'm going
to
get stuck, and so help, help, help.
See, and that's, I mean, like I said, part of this is that this guy sets a moving screen. Look, you know, you see him go way out with his hip there.
Well, it ain't a foul if you don't get called.
Right, but, and so Cam needs to just recognize that he's way slow on getting around that screen. You know what I mean?
And that's not Donovan's fault, per se.
No, not necessarily Donovan's fault. He needs to get around that screen, but then Cam does need to do a better job back here of setting the guy up. You know, he just doesn't come out far enough. Like, you got to get out in this range, like, not all the way out there, but closer to the three-point line just to slow him down enough coming off of that screen that he can't just, you know, he steps right into that and shoots a three.
And so
that's as in rhythm as you can get.
If Lard does get off and help that,
yeah,
and one of the, I would assume the next action from that would be that Luol heads towards the basket because Beverly has to make his mind up, leave a shooter.
See, what I, what here, I didn't really watch that part.
So
yeah, if they, I would think that if he doesn't get a wide open shot right here, Achul's probably going to come down here and post, or this guy's going to post.
And then one of them's going to the corner.
So one of them will post, and then one of them will probably come through, and they'll run an action a lot like that on the other side. They actually probably could, that might be what they're doing, is that he'll come here, and they'll set a double screen for this guy coming back around the other side.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like continuous double screens, because this guy is kind of creeping down there that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know Baylor's plays that well, but that's what I would imagine they probably were going to do.
And so there's,
but I think that, I mean, what the outcome of this play, what really didn't help it is that Cam did not come out hard enough on this guy once Donovan
to take
was
away
slow
your,
coming around
to,
on the screen.
To take away their first action
yeah.
to send them to their second or third action.
Yeah.
How many actions, generally speaking, are there going to be off any one set play? Is it usually a first, second, and third?
Yeah, it kind of depends. I mean, some shot, like some actions really just have one, and then you'll have some kind of flow that you go into.
Okay.
You know, like we had a play at Simpson where it was just a guy here, a guy here, and a guy here. And that's like once we ran through the initial action, then you just went into like dribble drive handoffs and you tried to
just get any open look.
Yeah, yeah. And that's usually because, I mean, obviously with the shot clock, you don't have time to go through six actions.
Right.
You know? Like in high school basketball, you can do that a little bit more.
Because there is no
right,
shot clock.
Right. And you have the opportunity to go through several different options. But in college, I mean, you run through one action. This is already 5 seconds, plus however long it took you to get it up the court. So you're probably already down to
18 or...
Yeah, somewhere in that range. And then you don't have a ton of time to run another action. And then, because if one of those gets stopped quickly, then all of a sudden you're like...
So it's really 1-2.
Now we have nothing to do.
1-2 to pretty much street ball after that?
Yeah. It's like organized street ball, though. Because you have some... Like, there is a rhyme or reason to it, you know? Like the passing and cutting, it looks just like wild,
mm-hmm.
but really, you like there is something that you know you're doing.
It's to try and get somebody some half a space mm-hmm. of look.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a timeout, and then we'll be right back, and we'll do some more of this. Sounds good.
Fun. I like learning.
Hey guys, it's Chris. Want to take a quick break on this podcast here at Cyclone Fanatic to tell you about my friends at Ames Eye Clinic and Des Moines Eye Care. These are great fanatics. They are jumping on board, supporting what we are doing here. You know why? Because you guys support them. They accept all sorts of medical and vision plans, a couple of convenient locations located in Ames and also in Des Moines, AmesEyeClinic.com, DesMoinesEyeCare.com. They offer same-week appointments. They can do anything from a routine vision exam to a medical eye exam. Got a large selection of eyewear, also for your contact lenses. So if you're in the need for some eye care, I want to tell you about our friends at Ames Eye Clinic and Des Moines Eye Care. Support them because they support Cyclone Fanatic. Now, back to the Cyclone Fanatic podcast.
Welcome back. Jared had to give me a little cue to
yeah.
tell me to talk. We switched chairs. This chair is more, it's lower?
It is lower. I actually think that it's higher.
No, it's higher right now.
Yeah.
But it generally speaking is lower because you're taller than I am.
Oh.
And
this
so
is a fact.
I'm going to change it. I'm going to call the problem as altitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much harder up here. Just let it sit. Just let it sit, Jared.
Okay.
Anyway,
back to
this film stuff.
Okay. What do you want to do now?
I just want to know, so offensively, I don't know if you have any offensive clips.
I do.
So offensively, it seems like there is a better flow now mm-hmm. than there was before, because I feel like Wigginton, I think we talked about this before, where Lindell in the first few games of the whole season was
yeah.
really bad. And then he realized what level you're going to need to play at in Division 1. And then he kind of picked it up and was like, oh, okay,
yeah.
this is what I have to do. And then the Big 12 happened, which is up another level. And then he was after a few games goes, oh, okay, this is what I have to do. And then he's at that point, he's been, you know, the Wigginton we've expected to see.
Yeah.
Has that been the main thing that's changed Iowa State's offense, or has it also been Lard, or is there a Lard's ability to run, or has it been other, or all
see,
of the above?
Okay, so if you listen to Steve Prohm a lot of times with what he wants Iowa State's offense to do, he always talks about the guys running the wings and pushing in transition, you know, pushing the ball ahead. And that's where I think Nick Babb has made the biggest impact on this team, because he has done a really good job a lot of the time of when he gets a rebound, push it straight ahead to one of these guys running the wings. And this clip is actually pretty perfect for that. So this is Nick Babb right here. He got that rebound.
Okay.
Lindell's right here. He's going to take off down this wing, and Donovan's going to take off down that one. And so ideally
– And Nick, so Solomon is under the basket. Is that Lard that's sitting in his butt?
Solomon is here. Cam Lard is here.
Okay.
And I would assume that in this scenario, Cam Lard is going to take off right down the middle of the floor. I don't think that this play doesn't get that far. So Cam Lard's going to take off right down the middle of the floor to the other rim, and then Solomon is going to kind of be the trailer.
Okay.
To where he would be the rotate guy, or this in a stretch four scenario, he would be the guy that would hit that top of the key three.
Okay.
But generally, what they want to happen right here is Nick Babb's going to get this rebound, and he's going to push it ahead. And on this play, that's exactly what he does. See, so Lindell sees that Iowa State's cleared the ball. So he takes it off at a dead sprint the other way.
And if you look at numbers, I feel like you've got two Iowa State players farther down the floor than two Iowa State players.
Yeah.
It's basically two on one at this point, because Lindell and Donovan are both farther down the floor than four of the Baylor players. And so I'm assuming the speed that Prohm is looking for is to get this.
Right.
Is to get numbers like this.
Yeah, exactly. Because you've got the Baylor defense completely out of bounds at this point. Yeah, you've got two on one.
And so the guy that's in the middle is basically having to
make a decision
of either take Lindell right now or sag off and play Donovan.
So if this guy hangs back this way, which how can you blame him? Donovan's one of the best shooters in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. You know, then you get Lindell going straight to the basket this way with a full head of steam, which we know that he's pretty good at doing that, especially
right.
when you consider the fact that Baylor's big guys are all way back here.
Mm-hmm.
So right here, Lindell, at the same time, he has to make a read. He has to see where do I think this guy is going to be that's going to give us the best chance to get an easy basket.
And so he's got to press and get that guy's hips open.
Yeah.
Because it looks like
that's what he
was waiting for, is waiting for that guy's hips to turn towards him, because that's going to be hard to adjust back out to Donovan.
I don't even think he takes a dribble here. Like, that's literally – he just sees this guy is going too fast this way for him to really truly recover to get back and get a hand up in Donovan's face. This guy, he's going this way too fast. So that's going to make an easy pass right there. Donovan's going to get an easy three-pointer, step into it, and bang. And that was the only three that Donovan made on Saturday. So right there, I mean, that's just like perfectly showing what Prohm wants to see from Iowa State's offense. They see that they've clearly got the rebound, got possession, and they just take off at a dead sprint the other direction. And when those two guys are doing that, Iowa State's offense is pretty dang good.
Because there's nothing,
because
there's one defender for both.
Yeah.
And so is that what Lard brings too? It's just the threat of Lard is not a threat of a three. It's to get down and pull that defender into the post to leave an open shooter.
See, and right here, Lard, I mean, he's considerably faster than a lot of the big men that Iowa State are going to face. He's going to take off right down the middle of the floor right there. And when he does that, if he beats this guy, that's the wrong thing. If he beats this guy, then it's going to make these two guys make a decision too, or else you're going to give up a wide open dunk. These two guys. And so him just sprinting right down the middle of the court, it makes these defenders make more decisions. And really, a lot of the times, that's what you want to make defenders do.
Is
make them think, you know. Because when they get set back into their zone, they're so good at that, at playing that zone, that they don't have to think that much.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to figure out how to do something to make them make decisions. And when you are making other people make decisions, they're more likely to mess up and make a stupid one.
Right, because it's not playing on reaction. They're playing on the thought process
of guessing. That kind of leads into what the other thing that I've got here. This is about Iowa State's offense as well, and this is making the Baylor defense make a choice. Specifically, you're making this guy make a choice.
Is that Luol?
Yeah, that is Luol Achuol. So right here, they're going to go high to Cam Lard, which is my high school coach back in the day. He called this area against a zone, he called it the kill spot, because that's where you want to get the ball. And it gives you so many different options. This guy, he pops down. Okay, you kick it out to Donovan Jackson for a three. He comes up. Okay, you lob the ball up to Solomon Young for a dunk. You know, one of these guys comes down too hard, Nick Wallerbab can relocate right there, wide open three-pointer. So if Cam Lard is good at being able to recognize that in the middle of the lane, then – you know, there's just so many different things that can work right
and that's
here
what
against
George,
this defense.
That's what George was right. so good as.
Yeah.
Because you had to help towards him because he's going to hit a free throw jumper.
See,
or he was going to get one of his 7 assists a game by just kicking out to somebody because somebody had to help.
And Baylor did – I mean, Baylor's like the one zone team that really ever was able to slow Iowa State down. And that, as much as anything, was because of the length that they had. When you could put out two guys that are 6'9 on the bottom of that zone – you know, you're going to have some serious problems. Or if you think about a guy like Torian Prince, who is 6'8", 6'9", with super long arms and is extremely athletic and plays the wing, then that's a really tough matchup when you've got him in a zone like this, especially when you consider the fact that Jonathan Motley or Isaiah Austin is playing in the middle of it.
You know?
And both of those guys are 7 feet tall and as athletic as you're going to get in that kind of spot.
Right.
So right here – on this play, Larda gets a little bit further. He puts the ball on the deck. He sees that this guy is going to hang back. I don't know if this guy was thinking that he was going to try and throw a lob. I don't know if he thought that Lard was going to try and get all the way to the rim. I'm not sure what the deal was, but he should not have done this because Lard just comes right there, shoots kind of a floater, and gets an and one.
And so that was based
so
on...
So he put this guy, this number 20... put him in a tough decision because now if he doesn't have any help from the guy with any length, this dude doesn't even jump to try and to block the shot. He just leaves it essentially uncontested.
You think that's because people don't yet respect Lard anywhere outside of 4 feet?
See, and I think that could be part of it. And he did – I can't remember for sure, but I can't remember if it was this game or the Kansas game, but he did knock down a shot in that range, you know, like right in that free throw line area, which is an important – like, you got to be able to knock down that shot to keep people honest, you know?
Right.
But see, what this did is that after he showed that he was capable of doing that, this was a couple possessions later. You make this guy make another choice. The guy right in the middle there. So Lard's going to come up to the high post, turns to face. If he steps up a little bit more, he's just a little bit higher up here than he was. This guy, not clear under the basket like previously. Lard turns, recognizes that, kicks it out to Jeff Beverly after that guy helped up. See, this is what makes Baylor's zone so much different. A lot of times this guy's going to be down here, you know.
Which guy's going to be where?
This guy is going to be down here more. But instead he's way here up at the top. And this looks more like a 1-3-1 than a 2-3.
And does Baylor mix up their zones?
It's just because of the way their zone is played. Guys have so much movement that they have to have in so many different areas that they can cover. And it's that's why they call it the amoeba zone. Because it is always free
and
shifting.
Just shifting around.
You know? And that's how you end up, like I said, this looks like a 1-3-1. One, two, three, four, you know, five. And the one. Rather than a 2-3, which would be boom, 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 boom. That's how it would kind of be fixed up. And so right here, when this guy isn't down here to try and cover this short corner, you should kick it out to Jeff Beverly easy, and that's completely uncontested jumper. And as much as we have joked about Jeff Beverly shooting mid-range jumpers, he's been pretty good in those scenarios when he's
shooting
completely unguarded, you know?
Yeah.
I would have to look at the numbers for sure, but, I mean, he shoots well above 50% in this range where he's at, this range, this range, this range, and this range. So it's when you start getting him out around the three-point line that he really struggles, which he did knock down a three-pointer in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But this just goes to show when you're making the guys on the bottom of this zone make decisions – and if Cam Lard is capable of doing different things, you know, making a little floater or knocking down a shot in the middle of a jumper in the middle of the lane, stuff like that, it opens up stuff for other people, and that's what allowed them to have some success offensively on Saturday.
Now, looking forward very briefly because we got to wrap up soon.
Mm-hmm.
Very briefly, does TCU or Texas Tech play – I mean, no one plays at the Baylor zone.
No.
But with the experience they got in playing – a little better offense because it's a little more – it's got an actual flow to it now.
Yeah.
is that going to translate, or is it going to be a completely different animal playing TCU or Texas Tech?
See, TCU's, especially defensively, they're not quite the same because they are going to do a lot more pressure man-to-man.
Okay.
Like, they're really going to
get... More Texas, less Baylor?
They're really going to get up in your face and try and, you know, make like push you into making decisions. They're going to try and do exactly what Baylor, like you're trying to do to Baylor against that zone. Like,
okay.
They're trying to put so much pressure on you that you speed yourself up. It's like what West Virginia's press does, but they don't do it at full court. And that's what a lot of what Texas Tech does as well. I mean, I think Texas Tech's like number three on KenPom in defense. But they're just going to put pressure on you and try and make you make decisions.
What do you think?
But it's going to be man-to-man. I think that – I said this yesterday on the Monday Rundown. I would not be surprised if they went 1-1. But yeah,
between these two?
Yeah. I would say that Texas Tech would be more likely just because it's at home. And that seems like it's, you know, seems like they're going to get one of those games against one of those top-level teams. Yeah.
If they want to sniff being a bubble team, they have to.
It's not even, like, about the tournament or anything. But the way they're trending upwards, you know, and they just have – if they're going to get any more, that's one of the ones that I think they can get. And because I think we saw it last night, Kansas is still capable of winning anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, did you watch any of that game?
I did not.
But they came back to beat West Virginia at West Virginia.
Good.
And so.
Neat.
Yeah. And then I'd still think West Virginia is a pretty good team. So, I don't know. If they're going to beat any of these top level teams, then I think Texas Tech's going to be one of the ones that would be right for.
It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing to call Texas Tech a top level team.
They are. They're number one team in the nation.
It is. But just historically speaking, in the past 15 years.
TCU's a top level team too.
That's also weird.
Yeah. TCU is number 24 team in the nation. They're 1-4 in Big 12 play.
God, this conference is good.
Yeah, it is very good.
This conference is good. Okay. We got to get wrapped up. So
you
got
to go to work.
Let us know if you like this format on the Twitter sphere, the interwebs.
If it sucked, don't tell us.
On the MySpace. If you enjoyed it, yeah, let us know what changes you'd like, what more you'd not like to see. Like, if you want Jared to wear something Iowa State related, that's fine.
I probably won't do that. Okay, we will talk to you guys next week. Thanks again to Agrigold for being the presenting sponsor of CFTV Live. I'm taking over your hosting duties.
Okay.
You lost them.
Well, it's the first time.
Okay, goodbye.